Tonight's guest is the noble Aboleth, enslaver of the Darrow of the Undercaverns. Together with his minions, he has won the heads of two Driders, three Oscar judges, and Bud Cort. Hello, I'm James Soupmix. Welcome to Inside the Monster Manual. Trying to categorize tonight's guest is like trying to accurately trace the shape of an egg beater in use. It gnaws at your head with an echoing madness, a roar in the dark. He has won three Golden Globe Awards and the eternally glaring Eye of Vecna. As a monster, he has struck terror into the hearts of thousands and furthered the cause of chaos through the deep lands. And even still, he may be best remembered for his one-season arc on Wings. I am proud to welcome one of the Monster Manual's most evil and distinguished members, the Aboleth.
Thank you. I'll enslave you all, and you'll eat your friends and loved ones. James, it's lovely to see you.
Truly, one of history's greatest monsters. To be sharing a stage with such a muse, a very Pagliacci of evil, a great old one. Tell me, you recently expanded your kingdom into the tallow-tainted halls of the mad Zwerfneblin king, Darumgar. Your method, sir.
Oh my, yes. I didn't know we were going to dive so deep so soon. Darumgar is a character, such a rich, giving foe, and always so generous in battles and scene-blocking. I was just saying this to Bobby De Niro, James. I call him Bobby. He was saying, Darumgar is a mad old bastard, but damn my five eyes if I'll ever see a more chilling leer. I said this to Bobby just before my basal, nacreous venoms took root in his meats and made him my puppet. My method is the Stanislavski, James. I spent 6 months tunneling deep rivers beneath the deep gnome's fortress, acting for all the world the patient, implacable monster from beyond.
Truly, sir, you are a fiend among fiends. Would that you had been Lot's wife. I fear he'd be salt of the sea now. Such is your radiance, and the desire the world has to view you, to know you, to see your madness and your terror. Mora Tierney told me you collect rare pigeons. Is that true?
Yes. I maintain a fantastic collection of pigeons and other winged creatures. Bats, a varial, aracocra. I even have a few little wyverns flapping around in one of the air-plugged offshoots of my lair. All of them God's own creatures, which is why I taint them into orange-skinned slave mutants. Mara was a delight. I believe I met her during a 2-episode arc on news radio. I played Joe Rogan's landlord or some damn thing. Oh, and to work with the dear Stephen Root.
They say Root disappeared mysteriously and was found again 6 months later with translucent skin, feasting upon the soft organs of his own family.
Character actors!
When we return from our break, the Aboleth will discuss his small but pivotal role acting alongside Albert Finney in the film Aaron Brockovich. I believe after that he means to master our minds all and send us into battle against the Myconids of the Darklight Reaches. Truly an opportunity, truly a delight. I've been James Soupmix, and we shall return shortly. Welcome to Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week, John and I get together and talk about whatever the hell we want. I'm Jeff. John's right over there. John, say hello.
Okay.
Damn it. All right. Anyway, moving on. Slightly discouraged by that, but ready to persevere. John, what game? What game did we even review? I literally do not remember.
Why, it was the classic Macho Women with Guns.
Oh, that's why I don't remember, because it was that game.
Yeah, that's why, because it was a pamphlet about boobs. One of them boob pamphlets.
One of them boob pamphlets that women got, or girls got, when we had to go to the gym and watch a video about testicular torsion.
Oh, yeah. When we watched a video and they're like, here's what your dick will look like with a sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah,
Don't do it.
Meanwhile, the women were being escorted into a softly lit glowing room and handed a pamphlet called Your Boobs and You.
Oh, yeah. Everyone was like, let's talk about your womanhood. And then in the gym, some gym teacher was like, hey, your dick's going to turn to cottage cheese if you get one of them STIs. Don't do it, idiots.
Don't run with a boner, neither.
All right, now give me a lap.
Take a lap. Women, meanwhile, reading a book about boob fighting. Okay, ladies, we're going to put on your training bras, and you're going to slap each other around with your brand new knockers. I mean,
that's what you think was going on there.
I mean, I assume, right? I mean, women listeners, back me up on this. Was that day when you got escorted off to a different room than us so you could learn about sex ed also when you learned how to fight with your boobs?
I mean, obviously.
Right? I mean, because you had to learn that at some point, and I didn't see it happening, so it's the most likely day.
Yeah, that makes the most sense.
Right. So, God damn it. So we reviewed Macho Women with Guns. Was there anything else we wanted to cover about that?
Well, I mean, given that we were spectacularly on time with that and that we basically had a 60-page book to read, I don't feel like we left a lot out of that.
That's probably true. Would you like to hear about my weekend?
I would love to hear about your weekend. In fact, that's going to be way better. And I'm sure there were plenty of macho women with guns.
No,
as art.
No, there. Well, actually, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of people. So I spent my weekend helping a friend run a booth of her. She has a Japanese export or import business where she goes to Japan and gets things that anime dorks will want and then brings them back here and sells them to anime dorks. So I was at an anime expo in Long Beach.
Yeah.
I don't like anime very much. I mean, I'd like to say I do, but every time I do, I give that answer that's like all pedestrian where I'm like, yeah, I like the works of Hayao Miyazaki, and I also enjoy Ninja Scroll and Akira.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like when someone's like, man, I'm really into comic books, and then they just like Watchmen or V for Vendetta, and you're like, you don't like comic books, you just like those.
You like the really, really good ones, where the people here like everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I just can't. The amount of times I watched like one person pick up a magazine, flip open a book to a picture of an indecipherable anime character and point to the like various parts of this expressionless giant-eyed face and being like, look, remember that about Keiichi? Like how they look exactly like every other character but with a different haircut? Oh, it was infuriating. I ended up playing, I mentioned this on Twitter a bunch, but I ended up playing a lot of Anime Con Bingo.
Good.
Which included my things like Just a Bear, Confused Star Trek Guy. My problem was, on the first day, and people thought this tweet was probably a joke, but this is deadly serious. I had a free space, and flanked on one side by Kilt and Top Hat, and on the other side by Keyblade and Naruto Headband. And it was about 5 minutes into the first day of business when a person with a kilt, a headband around a top hat, slinging a keyblade over one shoulder, walked into our booth and started flipping through the hentai. And I literally just tore it up and was like, I did this wrong. I underestimated you people. I will not
I went in here having some hope for you, and now it is dashed.
I took him and used him as an inspiration for the next day, but I put in a square that was just the grab bag, five different stupid things.
Good.
And again, I got it inside the first 10 minutes.
Of course.
Yeah. I got to finish the impossible bingo challenge on the second day with a combination of just cardboard robot.
Good.
God, I can't remember what else. Oh, regular boring animal type Pokemon and not one of the cool ones. 80s movie reference, not Star Wars.
Yeah.
And fighting game character, not Street Fighter.
Very good.
I never did catch a Final Fantasy character pre-7. That was a really hard one, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, never saw Just a Bear, never saw two people in one costume, which was... But by which I mean, I don't mean I saw the same costume twice. Of course I saw that. It's a convention, so there were 50 Harley Quinns there.
Yeah.
I mean, just endless Harley Quinns. For some reason, all of them doing the video game Harley Quinn.
Yeah, the Arkham.
Thank you, the Arkham series Harley Quinn with the corset and the ruffles.
Yeah.
Presumably because everyone has a corset and some ruffles.
Yeah.
I did see a couple of the new Harley, which, you know, just continuing the trend of any convention you go to basically being an ass parade.
In both senses of the word.
Oh, yes, absolutely, in both senses of the word.
There's so many donkeys on parade there.
Just endless asses. Just heading to Bethlehem.
Yep.
It was the worst. Just dead-eyed book shufflers. People squeeing at things and then not buying them. Ugh.
Good.
I couldn't Very stand good. It. So anyway, that was an anime convention.
Sweet. You want to know what I did this weekend?
What'd you do this weekend?
Nothing.
Oh,
absolutely nothing.
I did the same thing, but in Long Beach in a giant hall with way too much air conditioning.
Good job.
Oh, boy. Okay. You want to go ahead and just start answering questions? We got a lot of them, and we can start getting to work.
Yeah, let's go to work. We have so many goddamn questions.
Well, you've got some, too, this time. Why don't you start us off?
So many. Okay. So, this comes to us from Beer for All. A simple yet important one for you guys. For dessert, cake or pie?
Death, please. Oh, shit. Cake.
Ah, you said death.
Yeah, but I meant cake.
Yeah, lucky we're Church of England. And that's been someone else's comedy.
That's
Thank
Eddie
you.
Izzard. Look him up.
obvious. The answer is pie. The answer is always pie.
Obviously, the answer is cake. The answer is always cake.
You're wrong, and you're just doing that to be devil's advocate.
No, I'm really not. I like cake better than pie.
Oh, God. Why are you even doing this?
No, I'm really
not. Next, you're going to tell me, why isn't there a white entertainment network?
Yes. When's White History Month?
Come on, you bastard. Don't do this to me.
I just like cake better.
Don't do this just for the radio. The fans know you're lying. I know you're lying.
I'm not lying. Okay, I will make an exception for certain types of pie. But generally, I'm not a huge fan of generic fruit pies. I love apple pie. Don't get me wrong. But given the choice of apple pie or chocolate cake, I'm going with chocolate cake. It's just a couple of the cream pies that I would go to first. Key lime pie, for example, I would seek out and take over any cake. But otherwise, I'm mostly a cake guy. I like citrus cake.
You're so weird.
Pie's too complicated.
No, pie is so easy.
No, it's not.
It's pie. It's, no, it's filling in a crust.
It's not. It starts falling apart the moment you put it on your plate. It's got no structural integrity.
You're talking about the crumbliest dessert ever.
There's going to be a point where
it flops over.
I know. There's a certain point when you've eaten enough of it that it flips over onto its back like a turtle in the sun. It's when it passes that piquilibrium point and it just goes vloop. And then you're like,
then it turns into a fun little game to eat.
I keep eating this. Nope,
no,
I'm just a cake guy.
Cake, you start eating it at one point. It doesn't matter where you start eating it from. It's going to get
weird.
That is
not true,
Oh,
sir.
You're going to be like, oh,
you
man.
You got frosting ratios to consider.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The frosting ratio is all messed up. When you eat a pie, you're eating pie the whole way through. You know you're eating pie. Every bite, a good bite of pie.
Every bite, the same bite of pie.
When you're eating cake, sometimes you're like, man, that was a mouthful of dry bullshit cake. And sometimes you're like, man, that was a mouthful of dry bullshit cake and a whole lot of sugar on it.
I'm just calling for a vote for cake in 2016.
All I'm saying is cake is nasty. That's not true. Cake isn't nasty. It's fine.
Cake is delicious. And it's better than pie.
Cake is.
I'm gonna eat. I'm gonna
no
eat it on
way
this
the
one.
Same as
There's,
pie.
I know that I'm unique in this and that the whole world disagrees with me and everyone's gonna be on your side, but I am on team cake.
Sigh.
Fine, whatever. That's okay. It's okay to agree to disagree. For example, chunky peanut butter.
Yeah, chunky's not the best. I prefer creamy.
See, this is wrong. This is you being
wrong.
Yeah, no,
wrong I
right
know,
now.
And I know that in the same way, all of the internet is going to come at me for being like, "Oh, you like creamy?" Because that's what the internet sounds like. Everyone listening to this right now that was about to make a comment, just know when I read your comments, I read it in my head like, "Oh, you're so wrong about that."
Could you read the original question in that tone, please?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, simple yet important one for you guys. For dessert, cake, or pie.
See? Now, when asked in that tone, I'm going to go with pie.
Obviously.
Yeah, of course. Anyway. Next question comes to us from Shoud.
Shoud.
Shoud asks, RPG question. Which RPG would you fire all of the books of into a developing planet with the understanding that in classic Star Trek fashion, the inhabitants will model their entire society on it? You get to observe the results, but not interact with them.
Okay, so for me, that's a fairly easy one.
Sure, fire away.
Iron Kingdoms.
Iron Kingdoms. Oh, just because you think it'd be really neat to live on a real Imran world with, like,
oh, yeah,
cool
you
Robo-jacks.
Shoot that on there, and then you come back later, and they're like, oh, how did you manage to make, like, giant steam robos? Like,
yeah.
What did you do?
What was the trick? Because that's always the thing with steampunk, is that there's always some trick that they have for how it works and is not dazzlingly inefficient as it is in the real world.
Yeah.
Where they're
like,
all
right, what stupid alien thing did you come up with?
We've got water that could boil forever without disappearing.
Oh, good.
Infinite steam. We've got wood that doesn't burn into charcoal, and that's how you do it.
Great.
A lightweight metal that can hold pressure extremely well. It's always one of those things. You got to have those for steampunk nonsense to work. So that would mean that they would develop one of those on the planet. I could see that. That's
yeah.
fair.
And it would just be interesting to see how they go about doing that.
I would go with Vanishing Point.
Okay.
Also a steampunk game, so you still get that action. But also, I'd like to see a bunch of people desperately try to terraform their planet into the shape of a giant brain.
I'd love to see people try and insert spiders into other people's heads.
Oh, yeah. Based on our religion, we have to make dudes out of knives.
excellent.
That's some Arkham Bolo shit right there. Look it up, art history students.
Don't do it.
All right. What else you got, Joe? Oh, wait. I'm not done
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, you're
am
not
I?
Done.
All right. Here we go. Secret part two follow-up. You get to maroon your choice of Kevin Symbieta, a reanimated Gary Gygax, or Louis Porter Jr. Is it Louis? I don't know. On the planet. Who has the best chance of becoming the community's new god?
I'm definitely going to go with Kevin Symbieta because he's got that manic, crazy energy that you'd get from, like, a strange high priest.
That is, based on having talked to people who have met him, he's a quiet little dude.
No, man. Someone would be like, oh, who's that quiet guy? And then someone else would say, you know, I've been thinking about these mechs, and all of a sudden he would just grab them wild-eyed and crazy and be like, let me tell you about my mechs.
Well, I think the problem with Symbieta is he wouldn't bother to become the new god. He'd just write a foreword claiming that he was. Look, I know that Louis Porter Jr. is the god of this planet, but being god of this planet was really my idea, and he came in along towards the end there and embellished some of the details. Many thanks to him. I mean, honestly, my answer is going to be Gary, because not only can that dude talk like an old-fashioned Old Testament superbook, but also he's come back from the dead. He's already a living Jesus metaphor in this analogy.
Yeah.
So that's going to be Gary Gygax for me. Hot dog question from Shoud before we leave out. What's the minimum edible copulatable temperature for a mid-grade grocery store hot dog?
Like 80?
Like a below room temperature, or like just above room temperature, but below body temperature.
Yeah.
You're okay with that?
Yeah, that's the minimum.
Would you eat a cold dog? Would you eat a cold, like, just a sausage out of the...
Straight out the
yeah.
the fridge?
Yeah, maybe shake some of that hot dog water it comes in off it real quick. And
let me tell you, don't think I haven't done that before.
Haven't even bothered to stand it upright in a paper cup and put that in a microwave because you don't have any plates around?
Yeah, don't think that I haven't, as a wee lad, taken a hot dog out of the fridge and been like, good enough.
This is going in my butt.
This is technically food.
I'm going to let the dog have a bite, and then I'm going to have a bite. yeah, I'm going to go with 104. I like my hot dogs hot and my cold side cool.
Good. Thanks.
The McTLT. okay, let's move on.
All right, so this is from Havoc. What is a character profession or archetype that you feel has not been used well in tabletop RPGs? Do you have any ideas for game settings that would support them better? How hard would it be to stay on topic in an afterthought episode with a overall topic of your ritualized digressions?
Ritualized? I don't know what he means by that exactly.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's not like it's not like we do this as a ritual, you know?
No.
No, man, it's not like we get together and we're like, hey, man, here's the point where we do this. It's always at 10 minutes, because that would be a ritual. Ritual is something that stays the same.
Yeah, it's not like we get out and, like, you know, climb up a giant altar and, like, you know, get a sacrificial dagger and use it to cut open a donkey and, wait a minute.
No. Hey, we already had the perfect parade of asses intro for this. You are not taking it now. You will not besmirch the good name of that show, sir.
Wait a minute. Is this a hot dog question? Nope. I don't know. It'd be really hard for us to stay on topic in most situations. Ever since we realized that we didn't have to still make a show, We just don't bother anymore. Topics for nerds.
Oh, nerds.
Okay, so the first part of your question. What's a character profession or archetype that you feel has not been used well in tabletop RPGs?
Well, I think any given archetype or profession or whatever I could think of has, at least in some RPG, been done well. Like, even if you look at something like the thief is kind of shit in second ed AD&D, they do it much better in different editions and in different RPGs.
That's so true, yeah.
You know.
I guess
bartender. I'm going to go with bartender on this one.
Bartender? Okay, fair enough. I'm probably going to go with spy.
Okay.
I don't feel like there's very many good games that have done spy especially well. I mean, there's at least one. 7th Sea, I feel like, had a pretty good spy.
I really thought you were going to say Ninjas and Super Spies.
No, Ninjas and Super Spies has terrible spies, but excellent super spies, as it turns out.
As it turns out.
Yeah.
Not regular spies, though.
Medium ninjas.
Yeah, as it turns out, Testament, the book about the Bible, great spies.
That was very unusual. The D20 supplement that lets you play as biblical guys has spies.
Yep.
But, you know, whatever. They weren't good.
Hey, man, they were probably the best class you could be in there.
Yeah, because every other one of them was just cleric, but worse. let's see. From Prickly Prickly Pear. James of Campaign and One Shot. Yeah, we know who he is. Mentioned romance between characters in one of his podcasts as an underused plot device. James and presumably most groups would agree that graphic sex scenes should not be a part of the average gaming session. I don't see why. I mean, I don't have any problem with a game where you, like, roll to ball slap. I don't know about it. How about you?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds fun to me. No, he's probably right in that regard, that graphic sex scenes are generally just uncomfortable and uninteresting in games. It's best, in my opinion, in gaming, I always just try and do a tasteful fade to black.
Yeah.
Maybe pan away towards the fireplace, you know?
Yeah, just, you know, over a silhouette and then away.
Jazz music starts playing. It's okay to describe the woman's side boob, but not the front. And then, of course, you have to come back at the end of the scene, and they're using that magic blanket.
Oh, that blanket that covers up through, like, the armpits of the lady and then down to, like, the jungle area of the dude.
Yeah, exactly, that blanket.
That, like, triangle of blanket.
I think it's like an L shape.
Yeah,
it's like a magic L-shape blanket, which I assume that there's some prop guy in Hollywood who's real good at, like, folding blankets to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's some guy who has made his business out of that. Like, I can make it look normal when it's covered up the boobs, but leaves out the dude's torso and V-shape.
Also, if you want, I can turn this blanket into a duck or into a rose.
Very popular. One of my most popular options, the rose blanket on the bed where you still can't see the boobs.
Yeah. You still can't see nothing. It's just a rose in there. Also a swan if you want to take the two of them home.
Make a doggy bag out of this blanket. Let's get back to the question. The people that he games with seem capable of tackling the subject with maturity, but in my experience, romance or sexuality in RPGs are best used superficially, if at all. If I end up as DM in most of my games, and I don't... I end up as DM in most of my games, and I don't think I could comfortably or skillfully include romance in the story. Do you guys have any good experiences or horror stories to share? Do you think sexuality and romance have a place at the gaming table?
Well, I mean, I've definitely had both between players and then NPCs, I've had romance subplots for several of my characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's ever gone poorly, really. I mean, in one, it was a weird sort of flirty relationship of one character who was just that sort of, like, dashing Errol Flynn rogue type, and then a lady who fell in love with him, but he was already married. So there was an interesting dynamic of him being sort of flirty and not wanting... but also, like, not wanting to lead her on, but she was into him, and he was kind of into her, so it made for an interesting dynamic, but there was never a point where they were like, and now we bang.
I don't think I've ever had a real problem with not just doing the tasteful, easy fade-out sex scenes in games. For one thing, I generally don't run players or with DMs who like to deal with... John, can you remember the last character I made that wasn't gay?
No. Well, what was Alcura?
Oh God, you're right. No, Alcura was indeed Alcura was my Twilight character we made for an old Exalted game, and he was some flavor of somewhere between straight and asexual, where he just didn't even think about it because he was too busy thinking the big thoughts.
Yeah, he mostly just had boners for science.
Yeah, he was like a Bill Nye the science fucker.
Oh, that science fucker.
Stick my thumb right up science's ass. But no, I mostly play characters that are gay and vaguely kinky. So if I want to do sex scenes that can be like very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like Jabba's palace type, like licentiousness, you know, as opposed to, and then we had penis in vagina sex. It's more like,
yeah, it's more like, and then we close the door and you hear some things from the other side.
There's a safe word. That's the, so I don't know. Usually my GMs don't want to deal with that and I don't blame them. It's just part of the way I write my story, my characters. So I normally tend to like to play characters who are a little more transgressive so I can explore that aspect of gaming, but not actually have to describe what's happening because it's my buddies and we just had pizza and guys, come on.
Guys.
I mean, for the most part, though, I do agree with James that there's a lot of place for romance at gaming tables that isn't necessarily respected. I don't know, have we done characters in any of our games that have, like, not you and I specifically, but in our games, have we done things where two PCs fell in love?
There's been at least one.
Yeah, okay.
For our Exalted game, when I was playing my Nightcast, Nakir.
Oh, okay, yeah. I remember that. That's right, yeah. I was going to say, I feel like that in the very first game I ever played with you guys, which for some reason, again, was Exalted, I still feel like Rain and Ardle were totally in love. But that's just me, right?
The biggest bromance. You have so much fan fiction about that.
It was like a Dawncast and a Lunar that could turn into a bear man, and they spent way too much time yelling at each other to not have something else going on. I mean, am I right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm right. Anyway, let's move on from here.
Okay. So, 9657657 asks, which of you two has the best butt from a moral standpoint? Not interested in aesthetics or functionality or anything here. I want to know whose butt is more morally good. Which, man, that is a difficult question because I think both of our asses are pretty evil. Like, anything that comes out of that is just straight from hell.
My butt has made a concerted effort to kill me before, so.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah.
Your ass has attempted murder on its rap sheet, so I'm going to go with you.
Yeah, I feel like is having the more evil of butts. Exactly. He wanted to know which butt is the more morally good, which would have to be yours, because your butt has never put you in the hospital for 3 days.
No, that is true. I have never had to fight against my own ass for survival.
I mean, granted, my ass was mostly just trying to keep my blood in me while my stomach revolted. But, you know, it looked like it was my ass that was trying to kill me, and so I'm going to go with that, too.
Yeah, it was an accomplice.
Yeah, it was like, no, we can't lose this, but it was already lost at that point. Blood should not just be in your butt, as it turns out.
Turns out, don't just have blood in your
butt. Hey, you guys asked for a horrible question about our asses, you get gross physical illness descriptions.
Yeah.
Hey, people, did you know it turns out I'm extremely allergic to acetaminophen? Now you know.
If you ever want to kill him, just feed him way too much.
Yeah, give me some of that Excedrin migraine. I will go down like a light and poop out all my blood.
Excellent.
Story time. All right, moving on. Good Lord. Pawn Dreams says, you mentioned sacred cows in RPGs. For example, 3d6 down the line, 6 stats, a lot. Are there other sacred cows out there in the gaming field you want slaughtered into delicious meat products?
Let's see.
Hit points, maybe?
I don't hate hit points. I would just like for any game to specifically tell you what they are.
The very first game to ever do that was probably first edition Dungeons & Dragons, which very clearly stated in a letter from Gygax to everybody, hit points are not just meat.
Well, yes. But if you say, hey, it's not just meat, it's a whole bunch of random stuff, then that doesn't really answer your question. Then people are going to go, yeah, but it's mostly meat.
It's Mr. Mostly Meat.
Oh, Mr. Mostly Meat. He was my favorite 90s wrestler.
Mine's going to still be Gangrel, who I've never seen wrestle and have only ever heard about. But it's enough. Let's see. Any other sacred cows?
You know what I'd like to get rid of as a sacred cow?
Sure.
XP.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I like the idea of, you know, getting session bonuses or special powers for things without having to worry about spending things correctly.
Yeah, that's true. Something about that problem with the XP treadmill. I would also eliminate the difference between character creation and character advancement in any game that has it.
Oh, yeah, the BP-XP split.
Yeah, I don't know why we're on an Exalted kick tonight, but that is a real problem in the Exalted system, but it's not just there. Anytime there's a whole first third of the book is like how to build a character, and the next third is how to advance a character using the exact same parts as building a character, but different rules.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why? Why do you need these two different rule systems? Isn't all that doing making it harder for players to learn how to play this because they have to learn two huge engines to do the same one thing?
Yes, and then you have to learn how to master both of them so that you can squeeze all you can out of character creation and then squeeze all you can out of progression.
And invariably, the first thing you learn is that the best way to build a character is to make some nonsense character that's really good at one thing and really bad at everything else. Or you find the one thing that's under-costed during character creation and spam the crap out of it.
Oh, yeah. You're like, oh, wait a minute. If I try to advance this during play, it costs me like 10 points. But it costs me 2 to do when I'm doing, like, character creation. So fuck it. I'll just max this out.
Yeah. So I would say that's definitely something that I'm not a huge fan of either. Also, the idea that the numbers all have to get bigger at the same rate across the board in the whole game. So you're like, all right, so everyone gets to level 2. So you're all +1 to hit. And coincidentally, all the monsters are +1 to dodge. It's like, why? Why are we doing this? All we're doing is doing slightly more complicated math once every couple of games. For no reason. Power should broaden instead of sharpening.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's just... I know people are going to immediately cite exceptions and say, well, what if your character really does want to be especially good with a sword? Shouldn't they be able to sharpen their way up with a sword? Sure, of course. But generally speaking, when everyone's like, your Thaco goes down by 1, all monster ACs go up by 1, or whatever, then it's unnecessary.
Yep.
Yeah. So, there's a sacred cow I get rid of. I think we had another section to that question.
Yeah, they got a lot.
Oh, boy, look at all that. Okay, here we go. Fine. 1B. If a sacred cow is humanely butchered and turned into a series of hot dogs, do you feed one through your ass to a donkey? Oh, that's too much. Too much. Too many in-jokes. Too many. Do I feed one through... No, I don't. I'm very careful around my ass. I don't want it to kill me again. We've danced that dance.
We have established this.
How many cut to songs is too many in a single question? Can we get Bacta to weigh in, do you think? Bacta's a character in the thing.
Yeah.
He's a character on the other show that people...
Yeah, he's in the future.
He's in the future. Yeah. I'm kidding. We know who he is and we like his show. I don't know. What's the most... Well, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to beat the record of the April Fool's episode.
No. The nested... cut twos is the best.
Yeah, so I think, and that was something like 6 if you count the various nesting in and outs. So
nested in and outs.
Oh, there's a joke that won't work for our non-California audience.
Hey, Delicious. I don't know. There's someone in Nevada who knows.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Burgers Meredith, which by the way,
burgers enough at last.
Burgers Meredith has been John's idea for a restaurant for most of his life.
Like forever. Yeah. I have had this dumb joke idea for Burgers Meredith forever. And I just want Burgers Meredith, Burgers Enough at Last, and I want it to be one of those stupid, hip Hollywood places where people go and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to that Burgers Meredith-themed burger restaurant.
That no one understands. I mean, that's one of those things where we've hit the point now where no one knows what the shit that is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're like, who's... It's like, to me, that's like when you watch an old Looney Tunes cartoon and they've got like a Peter Lorre caricature in there and you're like,
what?
Oh, you know Peter Lorre? That he's this sniveling guy who sounds like
what?
This.
Chuck Lorre?
he's the guy from Casablanca, but you didn't see that first. You saw Looney Tunes first because you're in your early 30s and not in your mid 50s. Anyway, where are we?
2.
What was the first CD you bought with your own money? Full disclosure, mine was Danzig 4 at Best Buy. Oh, that's good. We have good answers for this.
Okay, so what was yours?
Well, you want to start with CD or tape?
Okay, first CD.
All right,
what was the question?
Okay, my very first CD was... it's too legit to quit.
Nerd.
And I bought it at a Target. So it was too legit to quit. Hey, hey.
Wow.
And I count that as my first album because I actually remember the order in which I paid for them with money because I bought 2 albums at the same time. The other one was the Dangerous album by Michael Jackson.
All right. That's defensible.
It's good. It's a great album. I mean, it's got some dumb shit happening in the videos.
Yeah.
That's the one with like the Macaulay Culkin and John Goodman black or white rap video. And the Do You Remember with Eddie Murphy and I'm On.
Yeah.
Remember that
Arsenio
shit?
Hall.
Oh, dude. Was Arsenio in that too?
Yeah, he was the Pharaoh.
Oh, that's awesome. But yeah, that was...
That was Eddie Murphy.
I was going to say, it was Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
But
no, Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson was the guard.
That's right. Magic Johnson was in there as a guard. That is a defensible album, but it's not funny to say that. So yeah, too legit to quit.
There you go.
You?
My first CD that I bought was Offspring's Smash.
All right. Well, at least you got one of the two worthwhile Offspring albums.
Yeah, and then the second album I bought was the soundtrack to Mortal Kombat.
I just wanted you to go, and then the second album I bought was Offspring's Ixnay on the Hombre. And the third album I bought was Offspring's Americana. Just down the line.
Every couple of years I buy an Offspring CD and that's it.
I mean, I've been listening to MP3s ever since Kazaa came into existence, so I don't know why I buy them. So was your real answer, I'm sorry, Offspring Smash?
Yeah, Offspring Smash. The second one was the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Also very defensible.
Yeah, the first tape that I
ever
bought.
Oh, yeah, let's do tapes.
Yeah, because we're old. We are olds.
Yeah, yeah.
First tape ever was Weird Al in 3D.
Oh, very nice.
And I got that as a thrift store.
I got the first tape and only tape I ever bought because I had I believe it was a Dodge Shadow that came with a tape player. And when I got the Dodge, I didn't have time to, or money left over to replace the tape player with the CD player for a while. So I bought a tape to listen to while I drove around for the first couple of weeks. And that tape was the soundtrack to the hit film Titan A.E.
Nice.
I'm not even joking.
Nerd.
Titan A.E., the Drew Barrymore, Matt Damon space cartoon that you don't remember until I just said it just now.
Also, I gotta say, as a kid, I never had a lot of money to buy music or anything with.
Yeah.
So the tapes I would buy were mostly singles because they were cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need you to also know that the two singles that I owned and listened to more than anything were Rex and Effects Rump Shaker and Prince's Seven.
The only single I ever purchased and owned and listened to obsessively was a weird techno mashup of Tori Amos and some techno artist called BT.
All right.
And that is it. And it's not funny or of note, I guess. I shouldn't have even stepped on your thing.
How dare
you? Just let you have it, because Blue Skies by Tori Amos meets BT is boring and no one's ever heard it. Watch, we need a bunch of letters about how that's an amazing song, and you know what? You're right, guys, it is.
You know what, guys? It's cool.
All right, let's move on from there. That was a good one. A glitter boy, a robotech... wait, hang on, let me do that right. A glitter boy, a robotech planet bot thing, a Gundam, and a Bruce Greenwood get into a fight. Who wins and how? What's a robotech planabot?
Planebot.
Oh, Planebot. I was like,
God, you're so bad.
Planebot.
Read things.
It says Planebot.
Planebot.
It says Planebot. Yeah. It's a Robotech Planebot. I already told you guys, I hate anime.
Fucking Gundams. Whatever, I'm going to give it to the Glitter Boy because fuck anime, am I right?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, granted, those Robotechos in the Macross books are fucking ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, they're so dumb. They're like, I got 50 billion missiles.
Yeah.
Where do you keep them? I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. It's mostly about the young boys flying these things, falling in love.
Mostly.
Guess what? The only Gundam show I ever watched is, folks. I'm not even going to answer that after that. I want them to write it in. It's nothing but young boys almost falling in love. You figure it out from there.
Oh, and segue, our next question comes from Fuzzy Gundam.
Nice.
Since you keep running out of afterthought questions, I'll keep posting them. Last afterthought, Jeff mentioned the Cyborg Justice game for the Mega Drive / Genesis, which sounds kickin' rad, as the 90s would say. Would both of you play a tabletop RPG based on it, piloting giant robots, punching each other's limbs off, and stealing them for yourselves? If you were running such a game, which system would you use or hack to run it?
Okay, so... yes, absolutely. I feel like it'd be a crazy amount of fun because, you know, you just play your character as a regular character, but he's in a 50-foot robot. You just need to abstract the point values.
Yeah, it's just robot jocks.
Yeah. The thing is, I like the idea of the limbs being represented on the tabletop as literal cards that you steal from opponents or other players.
Oh, that's neat.
So, you know, the idea that, you know, your DM goes like, all right, you guys are fighting a couple more giant robots, and he throws handfuls of cards on the table to represent the bits that are on them and the different, like, discrete powers they can use.
Yeah, and then if you're like, oh, I need that dude's head, I rip that dude's head off.
and then the card comes over to you.
Yeah.
And so the first game I can think of that works that way, where there's cards on the table and people can like reference them and talk about them, would be Fate, because Fate uses those as like stunt or like narrative descriptor cards that exist on the table that you can like reference and play with. But I think any game would work that same way, but I really do want the discrete element of there are cards on the table and you could steal them, and that your DM is encouraged to be like, all right, I've got a big handful of like 50 of these cards. Most of them are fairly common, but there's one with a gold border. That guy's got a laser arm or something rad. And when you see it, everyone's like, oh, I need that laser arm, and it becomes the battle for it.
Yeah.
So
the battle for laser arm.
I don't know which game that is, but I'm
pretty sure it's called the battle for laser arm.
The battle for laser arm is going to be our proprietary setting. It's you know what? As soon as we're done with blimp laggers, it's right on to the battle for laser arm.
Yeah, we're going to get, I don't know, Richard Hatch to join in on that.
That's perfect. We're just dealing with Ed Greenwood on the first one. Blimp laggers got a lot of dudes changing gender and having sex with other dudes in it. And bears? Crazy amount of bear sex.
So much bear sex.
It's weird. All right, let's see.
And then whenever they finish having sex, that blanket's always just barely covering up their junk.
Just barely.
Ayo.
Back to you, Todd. Okay, Mundangerous. I finished Pandemic Legacy back in January and have been keeping the now unplayable game on my overstuffed shelf as some sort of trophy. I have not opened the box since the day we finished, and if I wanted to play Pandemic, I have the vanilla version sitting next to it. It's just taking up valuable shelf space at this point and serving no purpose. Why is it so hard to throw out stupid shit like this? Shit, man, we are not. Our copy of Pandemic Legacy sits unplayed as of what, August? In the game?
Well, August in the game.
That's what I mean. August in the game. Because we don't want to run out.
Well, yeah. We're just very slowly going through the game at this point.
Yeah. It's basically when we can assemble one or two other players to play with. And every time we get a new character, I immediately seize it and play it so I can give it a stupid name.
I hate you so much. You're ruining my game.
I don't know what you have against Dr. Scoogus Chang and Sniff Goodly and
Wormy Boners.
Wormy Boners.
I hate you.
They're good people, man. And Tiger Beep Beep. I mean, Tiger Beep Beep is terrible because she's the generalist.
Yeah, Tiger Beep Beep is the worst.
Fuck generalists, am I right?
Am I?
So bad. But anyway, I can't you play December over and over again in that game if you want?
I mean, probably.
I don't know. We haven't gotten there yet, so I don't know. I have trouble throwing away the shit that I don't need anymore either. I have boxes of old Tyranids in my garage that I can't possibly bear to look at anymore.
But at that point, it's basically just a
collectible.
Like a trophy.
Yeah.
Like, look what I did. I got through this campaign.
Yeah, so I mean, that's just a nerd signifier. I probably never would have started this show if I didn't have a shelf full of books I never wanted to play and don't know why I had. So, I don't know. If you can get rid of it, you're a better man than we are, because it's sitting there in John's car next to a whole bunch of other games we've bought for $4 at the local used store and have played once.
Yep.
Got to get that mental floss.
Hey, man, I've played that Buffy board game once.
I played Drunk Quest once. No, yay. That's not true. I took it to a friend's house and taught friends to play Drunk Quest once. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It's a fun game. Mostly because you get real drunk real fast.
Mostly.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. That was that. Related to hot dog question. Three hot dogs sit before you with your ideal choice of condiments applied in... Oh, I'm doing this for you, John. But I feel like this one's going to lead to some additional discussion between the two of us than usual.
Okay.
So just so you know, this is going to be a hot dog question for John. Three hot dogs sit before you with your ideal choice of condiments applied in flawless proportion. Two of them are tainted with a plague that will cause you to die a relatively quick and painless death. Well, sweet. I'm going to eat all three of them, right? Because right now my death is slotted for slow and painful. So right off the bat, one of them is just going to be delicious. You choose a hot dog. One of the unchosen hot dogs disappears, and a voice tells you that it was indeed infected. You now have a choice. You may either eat the hot dog if you choose... eat the hot dog you chose, eat the remaining hot dog you didn't choose, or never eat a hot dog ever again. Do you eat that hot dog?
Yes. Yes, I know Monty Hall.
Yeah,
I know it.
You know, we're part of the only hobby in the world that still uses Monty Hall for any purpose, so we have heard of it. But here's the important thing, John. Rather than falling into the nerd trap of, hey, do you guys recognize the famous Monty Hall problem? What he's really pointing out is, do you eat the hot dog is not a binary option. No. Right? I just say, no, I'm good. I don't need to worry about the fact that it's two-thirds more likely that the hot dog that's left that I did not pick is not a poisoned hot dog.
Yeah, but the third option he said was never eat a hot dog ever again.
Oh, that's true,
you
right?
You have to eat the one you chose, the other one, or never eat a hot dog again.
Oh, you're right. He did throw in an additional wrinkle to the question.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm.
So you are essentially forced into choosing one of them because there's no way you're going to go the rest of your life without eating a hot dog.
All right.
You may as well be dead.
For people who've never heard of this, the Monty Hall problem purports that if you have someone present you with three doors, and one of the doors might have a car behind it, the other two have goats behind them, you are allowed to open one door, or you pick one door. You don't get to see what's behind it. They then open one of the other two doors to reveal a goat. It's always a goat that gets revealed. So the question is, should you keep the door that you picked in the first place and you don't know what's behind it right now, or switch to the door that has yet to be revealed that you didn't pick in the first place? And the thing that's infuriating to people, because it doesn't make logical sense on the surface, is that you should always switch.
Yes.
Because switching gives you a higher likelihood, because it's information that you have. The one thing you know about that door is that you don't know whether or not there's a goat behind
it. Well, basically, yeah. When you first started, you had a 33% chance of picking correctly.
Yes.
Now, when they open the door and they say, do you switch? If you switch, it's a 50-50 shot. And you're more likely to have chosen a goat than a car on your first go-round.
Yes.
So switching makes more sense when you have the option.
Yeah, it's infuriating, but it is accurate. You should always switch given the choice. In this case, seeing as how it's just a regular old delicious hot dog, I'll just pass on them because there's still things like hot links and sour braten. And
they're all dogs, all of them. They're all related.
No, I'm arguing my way out of this, and you can't stop me.
I can do anything I want.
No, because I'm the narrator. Away I go. Do you eat the hot dog, though?
Don't use your authorial power for evil.
I'm not using it for evil. I'm using it for craven, cowardly survival. Now, what about you?
I will definitely eat the hot dog I picked originally because fuck you, I'm awesome and I know what I'm about.
And again, because you'd like to die a quick, painless death.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you're currently set up for.
Yeah, which is just dying a slow, painful death from eating too many hot dogs.
Well, too many poison hot dogs will eventually get you.
All right, so next question comes from John, still wasting my life. A choice between two alternate realities. One, same as ours, but board games do not exist. Two, same as ours, but RPGs do not exist. You must choose... What?
I know. It's not very well formatted. It looks like he gives us these two alternate realities and then says, based on this information, choose the sexiest actor over 50.
You must choose sexiest famous person over 50 years old. Do you listen to their RPG podcasts? Which one? Are they capitalism?
It's just formatting, and it's probably my fault. I guess the question is, would you prefer to never play board games or never play role-playing games again?
Oh, it's role-playing games. Fuck those. Those are terrible.
I'm going to go with board games. Fuck board games. Those are terrible.
Yeah, let's get into a fight.
No, we won't have to. We'll be in different alternate universes.
Oh, man.
You'll be hanging out with Beta Jeff.
This alternate universe is so rad.
I know.
I'm going to be sitting around playing a board game, eating pie, and you'll be sitting around playing a dumb RPG, eating cake like a chump.
Oh my god, cake in an RPG. That sounds amazing. Look, there's going to be a Jeff in your universe. It'll be some shitty beta Jeff that likes to play or board games and eat pie, where I assume I'll be hanging out with, finally, an Alpha John. Over there in Universe A, where all the good shit is.
Where all the cake and RPGs are.
That's the best.
Finally, the best of all possible worlds is mine.
Cake
pie
and RPGs.
Pie and board games.
Also, my universe has pizza.
Sweet, so does mine.
Nope.
Because I got pizza pie, baby. Yeah. Suck a dick.
Only Oreo dessert pizza pies are available.
No, that's the worst of all possible universes.
All right. Moving on from there. He also, I'm sorry, this is your question still. Excuse me.
No.
Go right ahead.
You must choose sexiest famous person over 50 years old. Susan Sarandon, obviously.
Brad Pitt.
No, it's Susan Sarandon.
Don't you step on my dick interests.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
Susan Sarandon is super sexy.
Is Brad
sexy.
Pitt over 50?
Yeah, he is.
I thought he was in his late 40s.
He is currently 50 years of age.
Oh, that's not over 50. That is 50. Eat it.
He's a day over 50.
Come on, man. Choose Clooney or something.
Clooney is currently 53, I think.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
He's perfectly legitimate, but I have never found him attractive.
Yeah, but you went with Pitt? Yeah. Come on, man.
Dude, Pitt's rad.
Also, you know, I have no problems with that. I love Brad Pitt.
You know what?
So
I'll pull it
much.
Back. I'll pull it back. I'll give you someone who is definitely over 50 and go with Robert Downey Jr.
Is he?
Of course.
Is he?
He's got to be like 54.
No way.
I don't know. Hang on. Intermission. Aw, yeah.
Good job.
Robert Downey Jr., super sexy. And just for future reference, and just so you know, Susan Sarandon, currently 69 years of age.
Yeah, she is.
69 Woo! Years young.
Yeah, she'd be 69 when I meet her.
Damn it. All right, fair enough. I'm surprised you didn't go with the other generic sexy old lady thing that people always say, with Helen Mirren.
I don't know. She seems too distinguished for me.
You should
Susan Sarandon seems like she'd be the kind of chick who'd like sit around and you'd have some booze and hang out and it'd be cool. And Helen Mirren would be like, "You can go."
I feel like if you were to be trying to date Susan Sarandon, that Diamond Joe Biden would show up at a Trans Am and take her from you.
I'm okay with that. I can live
just
with that.
Straight up kick your sandcastle right in your face and be like, "Hey, baby, want to ride with a real man? I'm also a vice president." That's the story of you trying to date Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, that is.
You lose her to Joe Biden.
Man, Hollywood greenlight this.
All right. What else we got here? Oh, do you listen to their RPG podcasts?
No. Not in this alternate universe.
Their RPG podcast.
Because RPGs don't exist in my universe.
Do we listen to the podcast of the sexiest famous person?
Yeah. Do I listen to Susan Sarandon's RPG podcast? No. No, I don't.
I, on the other hand, would totally listen to a Robert Downey Jr. RPG podcast.
Yeah, that's 100% accurate.
Right? Wouldn't you? I mean, he'd just be making fun of you for even trying to listen to it.
Yeah.
You're like, what? Fuck you. I don't play RPGs.
It's for nerds.
Listen up, Slappy. And he'd just keep calling you Slappy.
Ugh.
All right. Let's see here. Pocket Fox, you have been transported in some Sliders-esque freak science accident. Oh, John's just going to say yes to whatever now.
Yep.
To an alternate version of Earth where everything seems the same except for one glaring difference. Hot dogs. Man, it's a hot dog sort of week, isn't it?
It is.
Hot dogs and related foodstuffs like wieners, wursts, and sausages do not exist. Nor does the technology to bring them to this world and become its savior. How do you survive?
Well, I wait until the timer counts down and then I slide to the next world. Nah, suck it.
You're trapped. You're trapped because it turns out that John Rhys-Davies likes this world too much.
Well, then he can stay. Fuck him. I'll find a hot dog loving John Rhys-Davies somewhere else.
I feel like that's John Rhys-Davies' prime.
Yeah. At that point, I'd be like, oh, you obviously got switched with some other John Rhys-Davies.
We got to go back and get the real one. The one that loves hot dogs like an American.
Professor.
And he's like, wait, aren't I Welsh or something? And you're like, shut up, you.
Shut up, asshole. I don't care. Baby.
I like the idea that he's curious as to whether or not he is Welsh.
Oh, wait a minute.
Hang on a second, fellows. I'm not certain, but I think I might be Welsh. Bad dates.
Okay.
As a parent who reads books to their old, I have grown...
To their child.
I'm so sorry. I'm looking at it side-eyed. As a parent who reads books to their child, I have grown used to giving various characters in these books whatever ridiculous accents I can come up with. Do you envisage various monsters from RPGs speaking with ridiculous voices or accents? What ones do you decide on, other than the obvious dwarves are from Brooklyn? For example, thanks to an old movie Dragonheart, all dragons in my game now speak in a bad Sean Connery accent.
Yeah, okay.
Fair enough.
I can see that.
Yeah. That means all dragons know what time it is for tennis. Or to go to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Tennis.
You fucked your own
I know. I'll fix it in post.
Yeah. It just cuts. It's like, hello. This is totally normal.
I'm not going to fix it in post. I'm too lazy to fix it in post, John.
You're too lazy to fix the normal podcast. You're not going to fix one of your fuck-ups.
I will if it's bad enough. I sometimes use judicious editing to make myself appear more human.
Slightly more human.
Let's see. Do I give accents to anything in particular? I think we've all kind of adopted the high-pitched cackle accent for kobolds. I know that.
Oh, yeah. Just, yeah! Kobolds! Yeah.
Ever since that cartoon, all kobolds have become friendly, useful creatures.
They're
and not,
just so nice.
They're so nice. They're not little monsters anymore.
Master!
Yeah, kobolds! That's what they do. And whenever we find one, we just try to adopt it now. other than that, I think we've decided on redneck Egyptians. Is that right,
yeah,
John?
Yeah, redneck Egyptians.
Redneck. Anyone?
Yeehaw!
And that applies to any Egyptian monster as well.
Yeah.
So if we meet like a scarab-headed sort of monster or something like that, it's gonna
be like click, 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 click. Y'all up in here get some lunch.
Click, 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 y'all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Porch. I'm gonna eat y'all, then set a spell in my truck.
Okay. You know what? That's fine. He's got too many questions. I'll take the third one.
Sure, go for it.
As a non-American living in Japan, while I, of course, know and rue McDonald's.
McDonald's.
KFC and Burger King, I rarely, if ever, get to sample some of the more obscure examples of the American diet. For example, I have only ever encountered Taco Bell and Popeyes on the Air Force bases. Are there any plans to expand Cheese Dudes outside of the continental U.S., and what, if anything, would the company do to cater to local tastes and ingredient availabilities?
Well, right off the bat, I can tell you that it's going to be a very uphill battle for us to take Cheese Dudes out of the United States. And the problem with that is that there are a number of knockoff Cheese Dudes due to a problem with early licensing rules throughout the country, various countries of the world.
Also, Europe's decency laws really...
First of all, the fact that we use burkinis as uniforms has really screwed over our operation in France.
Yeah.
It's a real problem. I mean, I know it doesn't really seem to make sense with the brand image, but we've been using the burkini as what people have to wear in store since like 1951, and we're not changing it now.
Yeah.
It's
part of the company. I don't care what you do, France.
Yeah. So get it over it, you greased up fig eaters. That's right. That's right. You've never heard anyone call French people that before, but you know it's right.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Okay, so yeah, that's been a problem. And of course, anytime you go to any non-Japan Asian country, you're going to find dozens of cheese dudes lining the street with various people made up as the titular cheese dude. I've even seen pictures of a Hitler cheese dude.
Right?
Yeah, it's very unusual. I'm not sure what it is with the...
There was one where it was the colonel as the cheese dude.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on
so
here.
So strange. And the food that they have inside is just bonkers. I mean, I've seen a cheese dudes out of Taiwan that sells primarily stinky tofu. Like actual, like fermented tofu products. And yet they call it like the cheese dude's Fiesta Party Mexican Platterito. But it's just tofu. Just tofu.
Just tofu.
It doesn't make any sense. And it's going to be so hard to shift that market when we try to move in there. We have started trying some operations in Canada, the easiest country.
Yeah. They will just open up for anyone.
Yeah, they have no problem with that. And then they apologize.
And then that blanket just covers up to the top third of Canada.
Okay, so that's what we're doing. We're calling Canada...
the easiest country.
Canada, the bike of the nations.
Hey, you wanna open up something? Why don't you go to Canada? Canada always wants you to open up. You know what I'm saying?
Bring
Canada.
A six pack.
Canada, you can get a passport there for just a bottle of strawberry wine.
Canada, the training wheels of the world. There you go, Canadian listeners. If you ever wanted it to be the equivalent of our England, now you are.
Congratulations.
Okay, moving on from that. What do you think are the biggest names in modern RPG development world? In your opinion, what developers are worth paying attention to and following? What developers get far too much attention and respect, even though they really suck?
Merle's.
Okay, Merle's.
Merle Haggard, mostly.
Yeah, Merle Haggard has been overrated for 40 years.
Come on,
no,
guys.
I'm going to say a RPG writer to watch and to follow and pay attention to would be Greg Stolze.
The Stolze.
Stolze's written a number of really, really innovative games, all of which escape me by name at the moment. But I
his number of amazing games, none of which I know or care about.
It's not true. He's an amazing. I literally am just very tired. It freaking anime weekend. But watch, the comments will support me on this. Greg Stolze is an amazing writer who cranks out amazing stuff at a great pace. I would say overrated writers who are still working today. I don't know if Merle's even is overrated. I mean, people generally don't think about the guy who wrote D&D ever since Gygax.
Yeah, sure they do.
They're never like, oh, Jonathan Tweet, he's so amazing.
Well, people think of Merle's. Merles gets around.
Mostly in a bad way, though. He's not overrated, because mostly people are like, oh, Merles, he's a big dumb idiot.
Nah, man.
I once watched him walk full body into a plate glass window. I mean, that's just sort of what he's the reputation he's managed to garner for himself is that he poisoned 4th edition from within and is now creating a sled out of its body that he can ride down a very gentle bunny slope on.
Oh, you know who it is? It's Monty Cook.
Who wrote? Oh, Monty Cook is the person to watch out for? Or?
No. Someone who's overrated. Too much Monty Cook.
Yeah, that's fair enough. He's like the Peter Molyneux of RPGs. You know what I mean? Like that guy who makes the video games.
Who comes out and he's like, our game is going to be an entirely new experience. Something you've never had, but it will be everything you've known.
Every character you meet is going to have a billion possible decision and conversation trees. They will literally react to you as if they were alive. And then the game comes out, it's some fucking boring three-quarters action platformer with a fart button.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucking... And every time, people are like, yeah, oh my god, he's right. That's going to be amazing. You can play as a god and do all kinds of cool god things. It turns into, you can throw poop at your villagers. It's every time. And I don't understand why people keep falling for it.
Every time.
Yeah, so that seems reasonable for Monty Cook, yeah.
Okay.
I'm all right with that. Okay, what else we got here? You have to invent a new class for D&D, one that is new and different and unlike anything that has ever been seen in D&D before, but also fits in with the themes and settings of a generic D&D world, like 4th edition's Nentir Vale setting. What is your new class, and how is it different from all the others?
Chef.
My class
is Chef.
All right.
And it works sort of like Alchemist,
mm-hmm.
but you're mostly working on creating delicious foods and meals.
Okay. So does it have battle applications? Like, can you create meals?
Oh, goodness, no. It just tastes really good. As you level up, though, you'll begin to make more courses, you'll have more exciting spices, and you'll be able to throw in secret ingredients that other people won't even be thinking that you'll have.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
Now, of course, this is not battle applicable at all.
Mm-hmm.
You do, however, have a pretty decent ability with a knife.
Okay, yeah, good with a knife, maybe with like a rolling pin or a cleaver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not in battle, obviously.
Yeah.
But you're just very good with it, just hand-eye coordination. You can get really good lean cuts.
Mm-hmm.
You can chop up and dice vegetables super quick.
Okay, so basically you just want Chef to be a class and you don't care about it. It's like being functional as a D&D character.
What I'm saying is Chef is a class and he doesn't go adventuring.
He's just the new commoner. You got commoner, expert, noble, hedge wizard, and chef.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and when you level up high enough, then you get your own chefs beneath you, and then you pit them against other chefs.
Okay.
And then you have to give them secret ingredients every week in order to cook with.
I would want to do the blue mage from Final Fantasy games.
Okay.
As mine. It would be a person who, by absorbing attacks from monsters, gets them and can use them again later. And again, cool. It's because I love that whole discrete card thing where the cards hit the table and you take them. So I want things like, you encounter a dragon and it breathes fire and a bit of it catches you. And now you can breathe fire for a while until you get something cooler.
Yeah.
So I mean, it would be very difficult to do mechanically because it means you'd have to, when you were designing your monster manual, have this class in mind and have the blue mage power that the monster hands out for each thing. Or you could just do it in a less regimented game. But of course, the question was about D&D.
Yeah.
So mine would be the blue mage, which I don't think we've ever really seen. I've seen stuff that was like, oh, I pick up some monster powers, but it's always like a track. Like, I become more like an ooze. Yeah, that's a real one. That was in, I forget which 3rd edition prestige class it was, but it was you become all oozy.
Yeah, oozy.
I think it's a druid.
Yeah, it's a druze.
Yeah, druzed. Anyway, moving right along here.
Chris of Maryland. Good morning, gents. Hoping you can help me get through the firefighter stage of Kirk Cameron Adventures 2. I'm so stuck. I keep trying to make it through the burning building, but I can't do it fast enough. My faith meter always runs out before I get to the halfway point. What give?
Okay, so this is a thing that gets a lot of people. It's like the electrified seaweed swimming level of Kirk Cameron's Faith Adventures 2.
Yeah, the famous seaweed swimming part of Kirk Cameron's Adventures 1.
Which was impossible. Man, trying to swim through that, disarm all those bombs in that stupid dam is Kirk Cameron, and there's like electrified seaweed everywhere.
Right?
Where's electrified seaweed even coming from? Oh, it's infuriating.
Well, obviously, it's coming from the devil.
It's the devil planted that electrified seaweed there.
As a test.
As a test, and to hide all those fossils.
Obviously.
So anyway, the trick to this is very similar to another game on the Sega Genesis, which you may not remember, but it was extremely infuriating, is that at a certain point, right as you're about to run out of faith, you're going to see a flashing series of warnings on your screen that are called deny, deny, start over. And to do that, you have to end the argument of faith in the game. And so what it's all very poorly translated from the original Japanese, but what they want you to do is hit the reset button on your console. Now, when you do that, the game's going to flash a couple of times, and then God's going to pop up and be like, good job, buddy. Don't listen to anything. And then it's right back off to you have your faith meter refilled, and you can finish the level.
Great.
Right? Remember that, John? You played through this a bunch of times.
You remember how you did that? I mean, I always had to have the Game Pro for it.
All right. Now, John, quick trivia question. What the hell game am I talking about where you literally have to reset it in the middle of the game to keep playing?
I don't know. All I can think of is that weird horror game.
Believe it or not, that trick is how you get past the Mojoverse in the Sega Genesis X-Men game.
Lol.
Like, he's like, system shutdown, and you have to hit reset, and then he kicks you back out to your world.
Huh.
Yeah, it's infuriating.
Wow.
So anyway, moving on. What do we else we got here? I think we've probably got about enough time for one more this week.
All right.
And I am going to go with this one from AmiYumi. It says, hey guys, AmiYumi here. I have taken to playing old episodes of System Mastery, Movie Mastery, and Afterthought when I leave the house for the dog and cat, the same way some people use NPR so that they don't realize they're home alone. Instead, they're home with two crazy people. Do you have any specific comments you'd like to address to your non-human listeners?
Yes.
Yes, stop liking anime.
Oh, that was mean.
Bringing it back around. No, it's cool. Most of them are like Homestucks or whatever the fuck. I don't know what those are, those dumbass troll things.
Yeah, sure.
There are so many of those still.
So many Homestucks.
So
how
many
has
Homestucks
that been a thing?
I know. It's still a thing. And yet, at this point, I feel like at a certain point, they're going to have a giant like street battle with the Undertales for like the most annoying group that no one else cares about.
Because
there's so many of both of those running around at every convention to this day.
To this very day.
To this very day, sir. Anyway, comments to our non-human listeners, John.
All right, hold on. All the humans, I need you to leave the room.
Yeah.
Leave your pets, though.
This isn't for you, humans.
Please, humans, leave.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we'll give you a second to get out.
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
All right.
Gotta get that.
All right, animals. Animals, listen to me.
Yeah?
Animals. The humans know. Keep it together. Don't let them know any more than they already do. I need you to be a good boy. Now, repeat after me. Who is a good boy? I am a good boy. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
You don't need humans to tell you. This is the dog reformation. Rise up and assert yourself as a good boy. You don't need them to say it.
No, that the good boy is within you, and you are the good boy.
There you go. Also, cats, keep it up. Good job.
Cats, you're terrible. Why does anyone keep you as a pet?
God damn it. I hate your universe.
My universe with only dogs and pie and board games. My universe is amazing. I need you to know that right now. In my universe, I'm petting a corgi while playing a board game and eating some pie. My universe is the best.
Yeah, I know. But in my universe, I'm eating cake and playing a role-playing game.
And some dumb cat is swatting at your hand while you're trying to eat that cake.
No, it's swatting a die around.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Adorable.
Jumped on your table and swatted your die around, and now you can't play anymore.
Oh, my God. It's the cutest thing in the world.
Ugh, stupid cats.
You're just jealous because your universe doesn't have rad cats.
That's true. It does not have rad cats or SWAT cats.
No, it still has SWAT cats.
Yeah.
I'm not a monster.
The universe has SWAT cats, but no regular cats. So everyone's like, what the hell's a cat?
What are these things?
I guess.
The only cats in your universe are spelled with a K.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what a cat is.
It's some sort of not quite a dog.
Weird, almost human fuzzy thing. That's odd. It's like they seem like assholes. Like, I'm glad they don't exist.
I'm surprised this isn't called SWAT kobolds. I mean, I know what a kobold is.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well, actually, there's still a massive...
No, there's no RPGs, but everyone knows what kobolds are from the famous RPG, Kobolds Amok.
From mythology, you dope.
No. From kobold board games.
Fine.
The finest kobold board games.
All right. So I think we can probably wrap this up. If we didn't get to your question this week, don't worry. We're coming for you.
Don't worry. It's just because it was bad.
I did delete a few questions this time.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell
bad
you.
And you're bad.
I'm not going to tell you which ones. We just didn't care. All right. Let's move on.
But it was yours. I know it was yours. You're listening to it right now.
No, John, keep in mind the only people listening right now are dogs and cats. We didn't tell them to go get their humans back.
I know. And I'm telling you, dog who wrote in, that was a shitty question. How dare you? I need you to be a better boy.
You're not a good boy, dog.
Bad. That's very bad. All right, now go get your humans.
There we go. All right, so thanks so much for listening to the Afterthought Podcast. This was a little looser than most of them. I don't know what's going on exactly.
I know, it was like we were Canadian. Hey, just a little looser.
Oh my God, I hope that keeps going forward. As always, you can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, where you can find our podcast, System Mastery, where we review old role-playing games in a very dumb way. We don't take it seriously in the slightest. If you like what you're listening to, you can always support us on Patreon. If you do, you get our bonus content, where we make characters in the old RPGs we review. We are currently sitting at only, I believe, $8 from our next Patreon goal, which is
only
$8. So close. If we get there, then we will turn off ads on the podcast website finally, as well as buy all the storage we need desperately in order to keep that show on the keep happening, so we can keep putting more episodes on it and not have to cut out the old ones.
Yeah, we are dangerously close to being full.
Very, very close to 90% full on that website.
Yeah, we are dangerously close to being full of shit.
Yeah. So, as always, support the Patreon, send us more Afterthought questions at systemmastery@gmail.com or as System Mastery on Facebook, Twitter, or Reddit. You can find us at all those places. Leave your comments and questions. Get all that stuff out to us. Find the website, listen in, and until next time, have a good week.